Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Wow.
Hello and welcome to the Abroad Japan podcast, probably the best way of learning about life in Japan without actually being in Japan. I'm your host, Chris Broad, and we're joined as always by England's top Japan enthusiast, Mr. Pete Donaldson himself. Pete, how the devil are you doing?
I've been better, I have to say, Chris.
Uh-oh, did somebody get COVID?
I got COVID. Not only that, last Thursday, I passed my driving test and then instantly got COVID, which is just they sort of say, you know, once you pass your driving test, there's a whole lot of freedom. You know, you look at the world in a different way. You can go anywhere. You can go left, you can go right, you can go forward, you can go backwards. But not in my case. I've been stuck in my house for the last week.
Went downwards.
Oh, no. Fucking miserable. Oh, so fuming. I was one of those breakthrough cases where I've had two jabs, two AstraZenecas, and I just instantly got COVID. Fuming.
Well, at least you were vaccinated. It would have been a lot worse had you not got the vaccine.
I was not having a nice time last sort of Friday, Saturday, and I'm so glad that I was able to... I was so glad that I was vaxxed, because I would have been in all kinds of trouble. I felt bloody dreadful, really out of breath, really tired.
What were
tired,
the symptoms?
I didn't realise... My symptoms sort of started earlier than I sort of realised, because I had a cold basically, and I was like, that's a bit weird. Like, so I was lateral flowing it, because I was like, look, I don't think this is a COVID symptom, and I was blowing negatives, and then suddenly sort of Thursday night, Friday morning, I got a PCR test and it came back positive. So yeah, it was very much all in the nose. My right middle toe went numb for some reason. I'm not really, it's just weird stuff like that, really. Very, very weird. So I'm hoping that I'm gonna have enough puff to get through this show, but hopefully I will.
At last, I can finally get a word in on the podcast. Took COVID-19, but I'm glad you're pretty much back to normal now, though. It only lasted, what, 3 or 4 days? The whole ordeal?
Yeah, pretty. I mean, the worst of it was 3 or 4 days, but I'm still kind of puffed out a little bit, but I'm just sort of spending a lot more time in bed, and I finished a video game, finished Thimbleweed Park from the creators of Monkey Island 2, Ron Gilbert and another bloke. And Thimbleweed Park is kind of like... it's like a spiritual successor to Maniac Mansion, because obviously Ron Gilbert worked on that back in the day. And not a bad little game. 10 out of 10.
The benefits of being ill. You get to write off the day.
Lovely. Absolutely
lovely. Thimbleweed Park.
It's rare that you sort of get that situation where you can kind of just, you know, get stuff finished, get stuff done. It's lovely.
That's true. I mean, I got vaccinated the other day, second jab, and that knocked me out for a day. And I just sat in bed and watched like TV and stuff, and I've done that in months. So it takes getting ill to step back and take off work.
It's nice, isn't it?
It's lovely. Yeah, it's brilliant.
Lovely.
Surreal. But at least we've got the scoop on what it's like to get COVID-19 right here on the Abroad Japan podcast. Pete deliberately caught it just so we could have the scoop and talk about it.
Petri dish. Just call me Petri Dish Donaldson.
Petri Donaldson. Oh my God. Oh dear. Well, we've got a story this week from Joshua in Houston, Texas. He says, howdy, Chris and Pete. Long time listener, Joshua here. I'm reaching out to tell you an experience my wife and I had on our first trip to Japan in 2015. We were in the middle of a 2-week trip around Japan, and as part of the trip, we scheduled 3 lovely days in Kyoto. We had several things we knew we wanted to see and do there, and knowing the infamous Japanese public transit system, we didn't think that this would be a problem. The plan for our first afternoon was to go hike up Arashiyama and see the monkeys, Pete Donaldson's favourite place, and then head back into town to have dinner with our friends. However, best laid plans of monkeys and men. While we had a beautiful time on that side of Kyoto, the hike up and down took much longer than we had originally anticipated. And so we decided we would just go take a quick look around the bamboo forest and then run back to the station to get dinner. However, in our haste, we ended up getting lost in the higher end neighborhood around the bamboo forest. We saw no familiar signs, and we were beginning to get a little panicked. Just at that moment, an older Japanese woman came around the corner, so we did our best to communicate that we were looking for the train. She smiled and went, ha ha ha, yeah, and nodded and pointed us down the street and motioned for us to simply keep on going. After a 5-minute walk, we found ourselves at a train station, though it was not the train station that we had arrived at. We figured it was probably just the next stop on the same line. However, things quickly started to give us signs that something was off. Firstly, they didn't accept our JR rail passes, and instead they said it would cost about 800 yen each. Furthermore, when we got on the train, we noticed it was much smaller than the usual train that we travelled on, being made up of only 3 cars. Anyhow, we quickly found a few seats by the window as the train started to leave the station in the opposite direction that we needed to go, at a pace of about 3 miles per hour. Patronisingly, that must be so frustrating. As the other passengers on the train began opening windows and pulling out cameras, we realised we'd gotten onto a scenic view train. We thought we were simply going to be on a 20-minute train ride back into Kyoto. It turned into a slow, hour-long creep through the mountains. At the end of this unexpected detour, the train came to a stop, not in Kyoto, but in the middle of some random farming community. We looked around and saw only rice paddies and a 2-lane road. How were we going to get back? Where the heck were we? Why is there a slow train that simply drops people off in a rice field? We had a confused moment of surreal laughter as we pushed the panic from our minds. Fortunately, we noticed there was a small group of people who were walking in procession over a hill, and we decided it was our only choice but to follow them. Praise be the Lord, when we got over the hill, there was a small JR station for the line back to Kyoto. Even though it was an inconvenience at the time, we had a good laugh about it and with our friends when we were finally able to meet up. Thank you again, guys. All the best. From Joshua in Houston. Story there about Japan's rather bizarre train system. What a lot of people don't know is Japan's train companies, there's so many different train companies, and some of them are owned by like JR, some of them have got like a completely different owner, but often it means you can't travel on the same rail line, and it gets bloody confusing. And I've been in that situation at least 2 or 3 times over the years, so
it's
not alone.
It's more
Joshua.
Like, I'm always surprised about, you know, obviously Japan's got an incredible reputation for trains being on time and trains being punctual and trains being bloody useful because of those reliability aspects. But out in the sticks, the how quickly the trains go, like hurtle down those kind of those kind of more rural tracks. I'm always surprised. It's like, oh, there's not another one for an hour, and it takes flipping ages. I may as well bloody walk. That's like Kagoshima to like Kumamoto and stuff, like places like that. You do sort of go, oh shit, yeah. It does. Like Kyushu's actually, it's not great for trains, certainly. Outside of the usual Shinkansen.
Yeah. Definitely get the bullet train from Kagoshima to Kumamoto. I haven't actually been on that many local trains over the years. They are very slow. Often they don't have a toilet on, and they get stranded on it, going very slowly and methodically through the countryside and nowhere to escape to an emergency. They're lovely. Japan's trains. And if you're lucky, you might get like a special painted one. You might get the cat train of Wakayama we mentioned a few weeks ago.
Oh,
there's always some
sort
of weird train.
Don't bring up them cats, Chris Broad. A lot of people defending you on Twitter about your cat nation. Cat nation.
Best presenter of a cat documentary in the history of the world.
True.
Let it be known. That'd be nice.
Oh, since we last did a show, Chris, your episode of, speaking of trains, you and Natsuki on that big posh train. going to that the sand dunes from Tokyo, I think it was. Wow, what an amazing train! Certainly beats the old Caledonian sleeper into a cocked hat from London to Glasgow to Edinburgh.
I've never been on that. Is it nice? I imagine you've been on it.
It's got better. I think they put some new rolling stock on, but it was really starting to show its age last couple of years.
Well. As I said in the video, unfortunately, Japan's sleeper trains are very much a dying breed. There used to be a really nice train that went all the way to Hokkaido, got replaced by the bullet train and low-cost airplanes. And you know what? Honestly, planes are just easier. I don't really like flying. But we got that night train for 12 hours from Tokyo to Tottori, and then we flew back. And, you know, the journey there felt never-ending. The journey back felt, like, laughably quick. It was, like, 50 minutes on the plane. We flew straight over Kyoto, amazing views, straight over Osaka, past Mount Fuji, landed Tokyo, job done. The train journey going, it's just so long. It's really long. And not only that, but you just don't sleep. I had no sleep. I felt so rough. And I think I did a pretty good job hiding it. In the video.
Well,
the video
you certainly did better than you certainly did better than Natsuki, because Natsuki wakes up the next day and he pretends he's had a lovely night's sleep and he feels fine, but he's clearly been up eating ham and drinking beer until God knows when.
He loved it. I don't know why he got like the good room, like the room with like a wash basin and a desk that he could write a novel at in between consuming copious quantities of beer and ham. Although I had like a crappy twin room, which had like no ventilation. It was like an oven. I honestly, I don't know if I'd ride it again. Like, yes, it's kind of cool. Like the best bit was when we woke up in the morning after 40 minutes sleep in my case, and had just the most amazing countryside views. Like you sort of go through Hiroshima and Okayama and then Tottori, but the scenery is stunning, really beautiful. It's cool, but like, yeah, I didn't sleep, and I recommend doing it though. You should get on it, Pete. I think you'll enjoy it. And the sand dunes are nice.
At this point.
Yeah, I mean the sand dunes were kind of cool. Like, you know as well as I do, most Japanese tourist spots, they always hype it up. They always make it look better than it is. But they get like a clever angle with the camera. They use Photoshop, and then you get there and it's rubbish. And I think most people kind of assume that about Tottori sand dunes as well, right? You think, someone's just got a clever angle. But they are pretty big and they are very impressive, and I would love to go back, and I can recommend it. But I just take an umbrella, don't get sunburnt, and you'll enjoy it. But yeah, it's got like 1.4 million views. People love it. Train videos, they're up there with capsule hotel videos in terms of views.
Love easy a train views. Video.
Trains and capsule hotels, isn't it? Do you remember, actually, we had a story a few months ago where a drunk woman in Yokohama got in a taxi and was like, take me to the Tottori sand dunes. And the driver was like, are you sure? And she was like,
8 hours or something, wasn't it? It was like
8 hours, 500 kilometers. I can't remember what the bill was. It was like $5,000 or something. It might have been more than that. It was a lot of money. And then she got arrested because she got out at the end and she was like, I'm not paying. And the taxi driver, he must have been like, for God's sake, why did I do this?
I've just driven.
What is going on? Why did you do it? Why did you do that?
I mean, it just seems like even like if you didn't want to be there, like it would just massively inconvenience you. You wouldn't like see financially, emotionally, like you wouldn't see the inside of your own brain for like a week after that. You'd be like, I've just driven for like 8 hours to get to some sand dunes for no bloody reason.
Do you reckon he just like got out the taxi, stood on the dune, just rolled down it? It's like, fuck it, I'm going to roll down it then.
Yeah, exactly.
A few moments of fun. I wonder if it was the first time there and he thought, oh, that's great. I'll get paid $5,000 and I'll get to see.
And I can roll down the sand dunes.
Desert. Yeah. Two birds, one stone. Wasn't there, was it? It was one bird, one stone. What a disaster. I hope he got paid, though. I hope they got some money out of the woman somehow. But anyway, on the subject of this week's news story is about taxes. And unfortunately, Japan is looking at giving passengers the option of tipping taxi drivers. I say unfortunately because I'm not a fan of the tipping culture. I think it's gone too far in the West. Like instead of paying people an actual good salary, we don't.
We pick that side up for them. Yeah, I agree.
You know, I think in some instances tipping is good, right? At restaurants, I know a lot of people that actually make way more money from tips than they do from the wages. And I think that's great. But then obviously it goes the other way. And certainly when I was a waiter at a castle, I never got any tips because we did it as like a group. All the tips got piled into a pot and then it got shared out amongst like 25 people and you got like a pound and it was rubbish. And it was like, why bother then? Because all the people that didn't put the effort in got the spoils that you deserved, you know.
And we've said it before, like companies rely on that and they pay below market and certainly below minimum living wage wages, knowing full well that money will be topped up by tips, which shouldn't be the way it is.
Absolutely. And I mean, that's one of my favourite things about Japan. There's no awkward tipping culture. There's no finishing a meal and then debating over how much you should pay the waiter, depending on their service. The service in Japan is always amazing. Everything works. It's brilliant. And then you don't have to tip. Like, this is the way the world should be. I hope they pay people a good wage. I hope they pay people a good salary here. But they're looking at now introducing tipping for taxi drivers. A company called Samwakotsu is trying to innovate. And among the services they've offered are ninja drivers. and in honour of the Tokyo Olympics, drivers outfitted in fencing gear. Fantastic. I don't know why that would be good. Like
well, it'd be terrible because you're wearing a bloody mesh, for crying out loud. Lordy.
Well, there's been an abnormal number of car accidents in Tokyo recently as a result of the ninja drivers and the drivers outfitted in fencing gear. No, I haven't wrote that. Would be quite fun, actually. That's a video waiting to happen. I went in Japan's ninja taxi. But again, how's that gonna go down? The driver's not going to be like, look at this. I've got nunchucks. And I can never remember the name of the...
Ninja Stars. Shuriken.
Ninja Stars. Yeah. Well, again, like, what's the driver going to do? Like, pull out, like,
no,
just drive
not particularly
by...
anything ninja-y, is it?
Exactly. It's not going to work. Rubbish. But great PR stunt. But as of this month, Samwakotsu is also trying to do something a bit more unusual, and that is include a system where passengers can tip their driver. As we all know, Japan's famously a country tipping isn't done. And a lot of cultural guidebooks go as far as to say that Japanese society would consider it rude to offer a tip. But and that's another good point, right? The whole tipping culture, the reason it exists in Japan is it's kind of awkward because people are supposed to be giving 110% in any industry, whether they're a waiter, a taxi driver, shop staff here. Anything less is unacceptable. And I think people would feel uncomfortable, the workers would feel uncomfortable here, feeling like they're being rated by customers. And that's one of the main reasons I think tipping culture's never taken off in Japan, right? Just a bit awkward, isn't it? Assessing people. But this Samwakotsu, they've decided that there's been instances in the past where passengers have tipped the company's drivers and they now want to make it easier and a more casual way of saying thank you. It'll be interesting to see how many people volunteer to pay them above and beyond what the meter reads at the end of their ride. But Samwakotsu's drivers' encounters with a certain number of outliers aside, tipping taxi drivers is very much not the norm in Japan. Also worth considering is that while some drivers might have smoother vehicle control or more polished conversation skills than others, the vast majority of Japanese taxi drivers are already satisfactorily skilled and polite. And that's another thing. I mean, I have used taxis a fair bit in Tokyo, certainly over the last year, what with COVID and trying to avoid kind of public transport. And I don't think I've ever had a bad taxi ride or someone who's been kind of rude. I had a really nice taxi ride just last week in Tokyo. I got in, and what I will say is, and compared to like other countries like in London or North America, where you get in a taxi driver and there's often an expectation that the cab driver is going to talk to you, right? Strike up a bit of small talk and talk about politics and the geopolitical situation in the Middle East. Is always a fun conversation to be had. In Japan, they don't do that. There's no conversation. You get in, they're very silent, they wear the gloves, they methodically drive you there, and then you get out and it's job well done. And I kind of prefer that as someone that doesn't really like small talk. But I did have a nice conversation last week with a taxi driver who was asking about like where I'm from, why I'm in Japan, and then what I thought about the Olympics. And then I sort of said, you know, what do you think about the Olympics? He said it was a terrible idea. And then he talked about why it would be a terrible idea for 10 minutes. This was one week before the opening ceremony. I had a really interesting taxi driver once who told me a story about how his daughter was, he wanted his daughter to date a foreigner. and how it'd be a great idea.
Trying to sell you his daughter, so to speak. Wow.
It was all a bit weird. He said he wanted his daughter to date a foreigner so Japan would become more cultural and have greater links with the world. And I was like, this is a really weird plan.
I'll do it.
Like,
I will make love to your daughter.
I don't know if it's uplifting or sinister, to be honest.
No.
Like, oh, yeah, I want my daughter to marry Pete Donaldson so we can build bonds between Japan and Hartlepool.
I remember getting in a legal taxi and it was a man who I think might have been inebriated, and he drove way too fast from Shinjuku to Shibuya, and he charges each 500 yen. And there were three or four of us in the car, and he had a little kind of Bluetooth screen where his stereo, what should have been, and he just played loads of Lady Gaga. Loved Lady Gaga, this
guy.
But it wasn't a legal taxi, so I can't speak for legal taxis, but I certainly had a few good conversations about how good Lady Gaga was with the crazy man who drove us home one night.
How did you find this taxi? I've never seen an illegal
taxi.
He was
just touting for business, really. Yeah, very interesting.
Bloody hell.
Don't see it very often, do you? No.
I remember in China, someone tried to scam me a few times. Like in China, I think the number plates, if I'm not mistaken, are either yellow or white. They're a certain colour, and that's the way to know that it's an official taxi. And I remember getting out of a train from Shanghai to Beijing once, and this taxi driver was like, oh, you want to go somewhere? And I was like, yeah, take me to XYZ. And he was like, yeah, come with me. And he sort of grabbed my bag and started running off with it. And I was like, oh, God. And then we got the taxi, and it definitely wasn't a taxi. There was the number plate wasn't right. I was like, how much is it to get to this place? And they often charge five times the price that it would normally be. And I was like, no, I'm not bloody riding with you. Give me the bag back. And I snatched it from him, and it was awful. And also in China, I had a problem where taxi drivers just wouldn't stop. They wouldn't stop. And on the off chance that they did, the 20% of taxis that did stop, about 50% of them just wouldn't take you. They'd ask where you want to go, and they'd be like, no. And then they'd drive off.
Hey, it's a buyer's market, mate. If they don't want to go there, I'm not going south of the river after dark.
Well, I've never had that problem in Japan, and I like that. Like, I've been lazy.
Yeah.
I've been terribly lazy. I'm like, take me to the end of the road. And they'll be like, oh, for fuck's sake. God's sake. One tip I'll say, when you get in a taxi, do pay with 1,000 yen bills, not a 10,000 yen bill. They do get a little bit pissed if you give them a $100 bill, which most tourists carry, right? As tourists, you have sort of big denominations, and they don't like that because they have to then decimate their little purse, which only has a few spare 1,000 yen notes lying around in it. So that's a little hack. But taxi drivers are good, but they don't know where they're going. And that's something. I know you've had that problem, right? The old, if you don't tell them, if you don't tell them somewhere very simple, like a massive hotel or a stadium or a train station, then odds are they don't know it. And because they don't like to get the address wrong, they're very cautious and they won't go. They won't take you until they definitely confirm the address. Yeah. But most of the time they don't know it. It's not like a London taxi driver where they know everywhere.
I think I've sort of found it easier to just sort of go, just take me to the nearest Ecky, the nearest train station.
Yeah.
And also, we said it before, phone numbers are quite useful as well, because that's kind of like the postcode system in Japan. If you've got the landline of the business you're going to, or just pick a business that's quite close and give the taxi driver that phone number, he can usually find his way to close
to
where you
need to
be.
That's a really good point, actually. And failing that, just show them a Google Maps address. Like, get the place up on Google Maps, show them the address, and you should be good to go most of the time. But it can be wildly different. And actually, they've started rolling out these big, kind of really nice black taxis that are more reminiscent of the London cabs, which have a lot more space. And I recommend getting in those a lot better, a lot more often than the old ones, because they're very nice, modern, clean, and they don't smell of cigarettes. And most taxis do smell very badly of cigarettes in Japan. If they're the old style, the old, like really roughed up Toyotas, they smell like 1978. So be wary of that if you want to come out of the taxi smelling nice. We'll be back in a moment with the fax machine.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact.
you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? Mine's pretty low after coming back from the craziness of WrestleMania, too many body slams and all that. And I'm pretty jealous of my co-host Chris, who seems to have been exploring Japan's most isolated hotel. He's definitely winning in the relaxation race, but I'm determined to catch up with him. It can be easy to get swept up in social gatherings and spread ourselves too thin, but with therapy, you can learn to prioritize your time and recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/Japan today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Japan.
Okay. And we're back with the fax machine. What have we got this week from our listeners, Mr. Dawson?
This is from Destiny. Hi, Chris and Pete. My name is Destiny, and I live in the awful state of Florida in the US. Very enjoyable. I listen to your podcast every day on my way to and from work. My dream has always been to live and work in Japan, teaching English or doing anything, really. I hear a lot of questions about tattoos, but I'm yet to hear much about piercings, gauges in particular. I have half-inch tunnels and wanted to know if that's acceptable in a work environment. Keep up the amazing work, Destiny. I guess it depends on where you work, I suppose, Chris.
I mean,
holes in the ears.
Yeah, generally, I think no. I think they do sort of equate ear piercings and tattoos kind of the same. I definitely wouldn't recommend doing it. Certainly like a teaching school. If you're in a school, don't do it there. Mm. I don't know. I don't think you'd really go down. I can't really speak from personal experience. I have never had a piercing. And I don't know if I ever would. Have you got an ear piercing? You haven't?
No, the only thing only thing I've ever pierced is my tongue when I was about 18. And that hole lasted for a long time. I had it in my tongue for about 6 years. And that hole was still there. I could still hang my keys, put my key ring through the hole for a very long time afterwards.
How do they do that? How does that work?
What do you mean? Yeah, they just sort of... Well, I think the tongue has
a... hole punch?
Stick your tongue through it, yeah. It was... It ruins your teeth. It really does. You've got to be careful.
Can you taste still?
Yeah, you can taste still. Yeah, it doesn't kill your taste buds. I tell you what, bloody does though. COVID, flipping heck. Oh lordy, I've been drinking Tabasco from the bottle just to taste something these past few days. I had scones with cream and jam and put hot sauce on that as well, just so I could feel something, Chris.
You
just
put hot sauce on a scone. Are you mental?
Yeah, it's nice. Absolutely fine.
Did you taste anything? Literally anything?
You could taste like the back end of like the vinegary side of the you could taste the vinegary side of the hot sauce, but other than that, it was all a bit.
Why does it obliterate your sense of taste? Is it because of your nose?
It's weird, isn't it? Absolutely bizarre. Really, really bizarre. Very strange.
Stupid cave.
I'm not a clue. Stupid.
But at least this is a time to like make one of those videos where you try the hottest like hot sauce in the world and look really badass because you can actually take it on. And because your taste was just broken. Like, yeah, if you had like a ghost pepper or a ghost chili, where it is, would you live to tell the tale? Like, would you actually?
I don't know. I don't know how much of like heat is in your head, how much you can actually take. If you remove the taste side of things, would you still feel the heat?
Would you still feel the heat? That's a good question, actually. I don't know. I know one way to find out, Pete. We got one here from Mike. He says, "Hi, Chris and Pete. I'm Mike from Belfast, living in Chicago, and I'm 5'6". So finally, a short-ass listener. To be fair, I think we do have a lot of listeners who are very tall and not happy about being tall when coming to Japan. So Mike, yes, you are. You are on the opposite end of the spectrum this week. I plan to visit Japan next year, if it's open. Anyhow, I know that there is a no-tipping culture in Japan, and I know they are prone to enthusiastic hyperbole when it comes to the taste of food and expressing thanks for pretty much everything and anything. So my question is it possible to genuinely compliment a Japanese person on their exceptional service or assistance and not come off as just showing a normal Japanese level of gratitude? If so, how? Keep up the great work, Mike." That's a really good point, actually. That's a really good question. Something that I've often thought about as well. I think that's why I struggled for the first few years doing the obligatory, oishii kore, like, oh my God, it's so delicious, every time you eat anything, right? And the chef or the waiter or someone comes over, or you're out with Japanese colleagues, typically they'll just go, oh, it's amazing, oishii, yeah, it's amazing. And I struggle to do that because we just don't have that in the UK, right? Unless it is truly, genuinely exceptional lamb or mint sauce or chicken.
I don't know why you mentioned that particular meat or that particular meal, but you are seeing it like a lot more these days. It didn't used to be, again, it's the Americanization of like the tipping culture, I think, in Britain, certainly. Waiting staff will come over and sort of go, is there anything wrong with your meal? Are you enjoying it? And, you'll obviously, as British people, go, oh, it's delicious, even though you might be eating actual dog poo. But it's just kind of like, delicious. Thank you very much. This is very nice.
I mean, I think if it is truly delicious, whatever, you would say something like umai. Like umai is the high hyperbole of oishi. It's the next level. Yeah. Mecha umai.
Next level oishi.
Mecha umai kore. Mecha means like very. Umai means delicious. And kore.
There's a lot of very words in Japanese, isn't there?
Yeah. Hontoni means really. Kekko means fairly. That's quite.
Cho. Just cho means something. Cho.
Cho. Cho. Yeah, you can say like cho. Cho atsui. Like that's another sort of informal way of saying very. Yeah,
crazy.
There's all sorts of ways. Do a whole video, do a whole podcast on that.
On very.
The 150 ways to say very in Japanese. But honestly, I think, Mike, if you come here and you have a good piece of lamb, I keep saying lamb because I haven't had lamb in a while.
I'm obsessed with lambs. What's wrong with you? Have some lamb.
It's bloody hard to find it here outside of Genghis Khan, lamb mutton. Genghis Khan. They literally named lamb as Genghis Khan in Japan because Mongolia equals Genghis Khan and Mongolia equals lamb, apparently.
Interesting. Yeah. There we go.
In Japanese, Genghis Khan. That's how they say Genghis.
Genghis Khan. Enjoyable. We got a message from Macori. Hello, Corey. He's from Ireland. All the best from Ireland. He says, "Hey, Chris and Pete, hope you're both doing well in this wonderful pandemic world. I understand through videos and previous visits a few years ago that Japan is largely a cash-based society, with the exception of using the old Suica card almost everywhere. I lived in China for a year, and the convenience of being able to pay for everything through your phone is the best part. So I'm interested to see if Japan might be moving more towards digital payments. Now, I'll say now, Chris, things are moving fast, but in the next show, Wednesday's show, we've got a very interesting news story about someone who subverted the whole online payment system. So look out for that.
Yeah, that's right. We've got a story of someone who broke all the rules, but it's one of those situations where you kind of think that's very clever and they deserve to get away with it to some extent. I don't think anyone got hurt, although it is robbery. But you'll see what we mean in the next episode. But yeah, you do have Suica cards, and there is something called PayPay, which is sort of taking off right now. I hate the name of that. Just sounds really
PayPay.
Just shit. PayPay. But
well, they like onomatopoeic stuff, don't they? It's like PayPay.
They do. PayPay. And I know that a lot of places are rolling it out and offering like discounts. Like when I went to see Natsuki a few months ago, I went to a steak restaurant, one of my favorites, and he said if we use PayPay, we'd get like an instant 20% discount because it was being subsidized by the local government or something ridiculous. So yeah, they're really pushing it. They're really going all out.
PayPay.
Nice. But as you'll see, PayPay doesn't always work out the way you want it to. In the next episode, keep the stories, questions, comments coming into abroadinjapanpodcast@gmail.com. For now, guys, no matter where you are out there in the big wide world, enjoy the next few days. We'll be back on Wednesday. It's all over again on the Abroad in Japan podcast. But for now, have yourselves a good one. Bye for now.
Abroad in Japan is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.